diagnosis of breast cancer can cause a life-changing ripple effect of impact, affecting those we love the most and those upon whom we lean for comfort and strength in the most challenging of times. My name is Aisling Hurley and I'm the CEO of Breast Cancer Ireland, and you're listening to More Than a Lump, a podcast that talks openly and honestly to a selection of guests about their very personal connections to breast cancer, be it through their career choice, their own first-hand experience of the disease, or through sharing the experience of close family members. My conversations will centre on how breast cancer has informed their perspective on life, love, family, health, their goals and aspirations. Although each story is utterly unique, the one common thread that runs through each one is that breast cancer is more than a lump. This episode of More Than a Lump is proudly supported by CarePlus Pharmacy. CarePlus is Ireland's leading community pharmacy brand, offering expert advice and services for a healthier and happier you. Find your nearest CarePlus on careplus.ie or follow them on social media for daily health and wellness tips. Sorka Lavelle was just 22 years of age when, following a routine visit to her GP to get a prescription for the pill, she was diagnosed with an aggressive breast cancer that had spread to her lymph nodes. She admits she wasn't breast aware and thought the small lump on her left breast, which was about the size of a pea, was almost not worthy of a mention. Fortunately for Sorka, she did bring it to the doctor's attention, who sent her on for a referral to St James's Hospital. Sorka joins me today to share her story and to remind us all that breast cancer is not just a disease that affects older women. She's passionate about telling young women in particular to look out for the signs and symptoms. Sorka, thank you so much for joining me here today and for taking the time to drive to Dublin from Cavan to share your important messages with our More Than a Lump listeners. You were only 22, the same age as my own daughter, when you felt that lump. Tell us what happened.
So I had gone to my GP. Well, it was basically I had found this lump the size of a pea, like you said. I went to my GP, thought nothing of it, didn't really think anything. Obviously, for every 6 months, you have to get your blood pressure taken so you can get your pills. So I went in and I had just said to her, look, listen, while I'm here, can you have a look at this? And I had gone to this GP for years. So she was like, yeah, no problem. So she looked at it and she's like, just a precaution, I'm going to send you, because anybody who presents themselves with a lump in their breast will have to go to a breast clinic. And she asked me which one was the most local to me. So I picked James. And she said, I'll send it off as like a non-urgent, because they can do urgent or non-urgent in a case where they see fit. And obviously with me being 22, they really didn't think anything of it, which is fair enough. So I went off and I went about my business, and that would have been in the April. And then it would have been about the start of August, end of July, that I would have had my appointment in James's. I took a half day off work. I went in and my mom came with me. And before you go, they send you like a form of what's going to happen and what you do. So they said, like, you'll see a consultant, you'll get a mammogram, you'll get an MRI and so on. So we went and we waited. And it was like you were waiting for hours. It felt like hours, but it probably maybe was like 2 hours. Went in and saw a registrar. And she looked me over, and at the time it had been from seeing my GP to going in here, it had grown from the size of a pea to about the size of a golf ball. So it had massively grown. And I still naively was like, oh, it's nothing. Like, there's nothing there. Didn't think anything of it. My mom had suffered with cysts before, so I genuinely thought that this was just going to be something benign and nothing to worry about. And my friends and I had spoken about it whilst I was waiting, and nothing really between my friends and I came up that it would be anything. And we were like a group of three girls, and none of us would have said anything different.
And how are you feeling in yourself at that time?
I was sick. I was probably like, I was getting like chest infections. I was like vomiting. Like, and I used to go out drinking. Like, I worked Monday to Friday. I was working a full-time job. I'd left my old job because I wasn't feeling too well. So I left that. And I was picking up like sicknesses like no tomorrow. But I just thought, like, you know, it's just typical. Like,
I'm
not like looking after myself as I should be. I'm not taking my vitamins. Like, I didn't really think anything of it. But I remember towards the end, I used to get darting pains through my chest at the would run up in through my breast. And that was about maybe like a month before going to this appointment. And I just thought, oh, I'm going to the appointment, so I'll just say it there. Like, it's why would I bother going back to my GP when I already have this appointment? Again, that was obviously a naive thing to think as well. So I went to the appointment, waited, went in, and the registrar looked at me and she did the whole thing. And she's like, okay, we'll come back in 8 weeks. And my mom was with me, and my mom was a nurse. So she was like, no, she's like, my daughter's 22 and she's coming to you with a lump that has grown. And she's also getting darting pains through her breast. Like, I want her to be seen to today. And on this form, it says that like this will happen. And she was like, oh, no, that's only in like exceptional circumstances. And like, this isn't, we don't see this as an exceptional circumstance. So my mom was like, I want to see the consultant who's on today. And as the reg was walking out the room, I'll never forget this. She was like, I'm 99% sure that this isn't breast cancer.
Wow.
And the consultant came in, he checked me over and he said, I want you back tomorrow for a mammogram and I want you to an MRI. Yeah. And that was it. And that's kind of where I started. So then I went back to work, didn't think anything of it again. I was still like, oh, it's fine. So I went back to work that day, came in the next day, took another half day from work, did my mammogram. Horrific as well. It is so painful, but you know, it is like, if anyone can do it, like, and that's another thing, like mammograms, the age limit for a mammogram,
I know,
it's what is it, 35?
Oh, no, older? Well, it's no, from 50.
Yeah.
From 50. Oh, for the free breast check.
For the free
check.
Breast check.
Yeah.
So, like, that's another thing that I always think, like, why are we doing it for the older generation? Like, why is that not, like, even 30?
I suppose the issue is that for younger people, and it's something we constantly say to people, is that from the age of 50, the reason why they adopt 50 as the age category is, as you get older, your breast tissue turns from white into grey, mm-hmm. into dark grey, into black. Mm-hmm. So when you're in your 80s and 90s, it's black. But as mm-hmm. you get older, the breast tissue dies off and it becomes grey.
Yeah.
So the younger you are, your breast tissue is white. Cancer is white. So mm-hmm. cancer is white on white. Very hard to detect
okay.
in a mammogram. Mm. But yet mammography is the standard and the best imaging we have yeah. available. It is really, 90% is accurate. So mm. and younger people like you,
yeah.
they would absolutely say, we'll do mammogram
yeah.
and we will then very much do ultrasound, do yeah. an MRI
yeah.
to see where we go from here.
Yeah, so I would have done an ultrasound then as well. That day I had an ultrasound done as well. And then they took a biopsy.
Okay.
So I would have had the biopsy done. But again, I was like, oh, it's fine. 2 weeks went past. 17th of August, I went back out with my mom. And my mom got the bus up from Kells, because we would have been living in Cavan at the time. That's where I grew up for part of my life. So my mom was living there with my stepdad. And I remember she got the bus from Kells. And like every day we passed it, like if we ever passed it together, she'd be like, I'll never forget the day that I got the bus from there. Mm-hmm. I took another half day off work thinking, genuinely, this is how much I didn't think of it. Like I just took a half day off work. I worked in town at the time. And my mom met me in town and we both got the Lewis out to James's Hospital together. And I waited. And it's funny because the more I think back on it now, everybody who had been called in prior to me was called in by the consultant. But when it came to me, I was called in by the breast nurse.
Interesting.
And that's, I clocked that after. I was like, that's because somebody has to be in the room when you get diagnosed. Mm-hmm. But I wouldn't have known that prior, but it was only after I thought about it. I was like, because everybody else was called in by him except for me. Mm-hmm. It was the breast nurse who I'm still very friendly with now and has been very, very good to me throughout my whole journey. Lovely, mm-hmm. lovely woman in James's. So she brought me in and they do this whole small talk, like, you're 22, you work here and this is where you live. And he just turned to me and he said, I'm really sorry, I'm diagnosing you with aggressive form of breast cancer. And I laughed and I said, you're joking. And he goes, I'm not. And I remember I just was like, what? I remember looking at my mom and my mom's eyes were full of tears. And I was just like, what? I just couldn't comprehend it. Like, and then he said a few more things, but like, I don't remember anything. I remember though leaving there and going into the toilet in James's and like literally like leaning myself against the door and just like falling down crying. Because I was like, what is going on? Like,
yeah.
like yesterday I was a normal 22-year-old living in Dublin, working in Dublin, going out with my friends. And now today it's like everything is different. So
did they tell you there and then the type of treatment plan you might be going on?
No. Or? So they kind of drip feed you the information to okay. make it easier to absorb. So they would have given me that information the 17th. And I'm sure I maybe had the day off after that. And then I would have been back up in the hospital meeting my consultant again. And then they would have given us the process of how I'll go through my treatment plan. Mm-hmm. I remember going home that night and I went back to my house in Dublin with my mom, packed up whatever I thought I needed and went, and my mom drove us down to Cavan and I lived in Cavan from then on. And I remember my mom had to like ring my brother, like I'd be very close to my brother who now lives in Cavan beside us. I remember my mom had to ring him and he came down, and then I had a brother who lived in Toronto and I had a brother who lived in London as well. So my mom had to ring everybody.
Oh.
And like, it's just heartbreaking as well. Like, and I think for my brothers who lived abroad, I think that was really tough for them because they couldn't be there. And I'm their baby sister. Like, I'm the youngest.
Yeah.
I'm the only
girl.
It's
unimaginable, you know, at 22 years of age that you'd have a sibling that's diagnosed.
Yeah. So then they told me, so that was a couple of days later. I can't remember the exact dates, but they would have told me then a couple of days later. So you'll have chemotherapy and then we'll do surgery and then we'll do radiotherapy. So then 2 weeks later, I started my chemotherapy. So on like the 30th of August, I was on my first round of chemotherapy.
Wow.
And I had chemotherapy every week, every Wednesday, For a couple of weeks. I think it was about 12 weeks. And I remember, like, for the first couple of weeks or the first 2 weeks, you were fine. Like, it's until it builds up in your system. And then it was I remember, like, I'd get chemo on a Wednesday, and by like the Saturday I'd be feeling like somewhat okay. Sunday you're okay, and then Monday, Tuesday you're like, oh, I'm fine. And then it'll come back again to Wednesday so quickly, and then you're back again. And then that faded, because then I got onto another round of chemo. So I was on two sets of chemo.
Okay.
And then I did Herceptin as well. So I started that as well. But yeah, I remember when it was coming down to, like, I think I'd done my second round of chemo, I was like, okay, well, I'm going to do my hair, because I'd asked all these questions. I was like to my oncologist, and he was like a man of my dad's age, and he had kids my age. Mm-hmm. And he was a lovely, lovely man. He's recently retired, but lovely man, brought me through my whole journey. I was very fond of him. And I asked him, like, will I lose my hair? And he goes, yeah, you'll lose everything. Like, everything, you're just going to lose your eyelashes, your eyebrows. He never beat around the bush.
Yeah, brilliant.
He was so straight to the point with me. And it was great, because I needed that.
Yeah.
Didn't need someone to mollycoddle me. Mm-hmm. I just needed the information. Yeah. And then, like, I could deal with it myself.
Mm-hmm.
But
for anyone that, because we can't see you because we're on a podcast.
Yeah.
But you have amazingly beautiful hair.
Yeah, it's because it would have been a lot lighter. I'm like quite ginger naturally. So it would have been a lot lighter to this as well. And I would have had this thickness and curly ginger hair. And I remember thinking, like, this is the only thing I have control over. So let me deal with this how I want to. So I went to a wig shop in town with my friend. My mom dropped me in, and I was like, I told her my story. And I was like, I'm just going to get my hair cut. And she's like, okay, we'll kind of do like a bob first. And I sat there in the mirror, and I was like, nah, let's just cut it all off. And she's like, no, I think we should start. And I was like, no, I got it. Like, let's just shave it all off. So shaved my whole hair off.
In one go.
I went from this, it probably would have been about the length of this, to it being totally bald in one day. So shaved it all off. And that's kind of, and then I got a wig, and I didn't really wear the wig much. I wore a lot of headscarves. That was kind of my thing. Yeah. I wore a lot of headscarves.
Yeah. A lot of times people often say that the wigs, whether they're too warm or they're itchy.
So hot. And you're just like, why am I bothered? People know I have cancer. I have no eyebrows or eyelashes. Yeah. Like, who am I trying to kid here? So I opted for the headscarves. That was my thing.
And then your treatment, you had a mastectomy of the left breast.
Yeah, so after chemo, would have ran until about, I think it would have ran in through Christmas as well. And then I think I got about a couple of weeks off in January. And then I had my first mastectomy in the February. So I did a reconstruction on the day. So I was in theatre for about 9 hours. And I remember coming out of it, and I was like, oh my God, the pain is indescribable. And then it was 2 nights later, I got an infection in my implant. So I had to go back. I had to be rushed back into surgery on antibiotics, rushed back into surgery, implant removed, washed and put back in. I was in hospital for about 3.5-4 weeks that time. It was tough. It was very, very,
very
tough.
Very, very tough.
Yeah.
And the decision to have it immediately,
mm-hmm.
was yours, or was it recommended to you?
It was recommended, but I also think it was probably, they saw me as a 22-year-old, and I had just gone 23. I'm a December baby, so mm-hmm. I had just turned the 23, and I had gone through, I was like going through chemo during my 23rd birthday, which is crazy to think. I'd gone through it. So I think it was maybe a joint decision, but I do think it was a lot to do with my plastic surgeon consultant, who was a female. And my oncologist and my consultant would have probably seen me as kids their own age and thought, this is a lot for someone to deal with mentally, mm-hmm. let alone mm-hmm. then the physical aspect of it as well. So mm-hmm. we did reconstruction on the day, which was great. And I had an expander implant, so would have been put in smaller, and then you expand it with water. So I would have had it expanded every week or so up in the plastics team up in Dublin as well.
Okay.
So I'd have had to do that too.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
And then you went on then to have another, you're right.
So I did my radiotherapy first. So I did 28 days consecutively of radiotherapy mm-hmm. in Dublin as well. Mm-hmm. And that was quite tough in itself as well, because it would have burnt, like it burns your skin obviously because the radiotherapy. So I did 28 full days of that. And then I would have gone back and I had my second mastectomy on my right breast.
Without any difficulty?
Without any difficulties.
Okay.
So I was in hospital probably for about a week maybe, just because mm-hmm. it's such an intensive surgery.
Yeah.
And it's so harsh on your body. Like breast surgery in general is quite a hard one. So I think that it's quite intrusive on your body. But I recovered much quicker on this one around because yeah. obviously it just wasn't. But on my first one, obviously they had taken out 28 lymph nodes on my breast that was obviously had the cancer in it. They took out 28 lymph nodes, and this was after chemotherapy, and three of those lymph nodes were still active with cancer.
Yeah, so it had to happen. Yeah.
And had I left it, maybe say the 8 weeks that the reg wanted me to leave, I don't know.
Yes, exactly.
Because it was spreading. That aggressive. It was so aggressive, and it was spreading. So it spread from my breast into my lymph nodes, yeah. and it would have just continued.
Continued through the body, mm-hmm. yeah.
If I hadn't have been caught.
Yeah. And tell me, so on the drugs that you've been on,
yeah.
so, I mean, at 23 years of age, you are plunged yeah. into early menopause.
Yeah. So I would have gone on to Zoladex, which is a hormone you inject it into you and it shuts off your ovaries.
Yeah.
And then I was on Tamoxifen, which I'm still on. Mm-hmm. It's another hormone based drug. So I was put into early menopause where I was getting hot flushes. I didn't have a period. I didn't have anything. Nothing. So that in itself was really hard to deal with because you're dealing with the side effects of coming off chemo. And then I was still on Herceptin for a year. Mm. So you were coming off that. And then you're still in the midst of dealing then with being in an early menopause. And I took 16 months off for this whole thing. And then I went back into work and I went back into being a flight attendant after 16 months.
Wow.
Yeah, so I went straight back into work. I just had like, I was like, I don't want to like be doing nothing anymore. Because yeah. at that point you become, you're not sick anymore, let's say, because you're not feeling the side effects of the chemo. So in my head, because I was so young, I was like, I'm better. So now I want to become my old self again. I want to get yeah. back into the world. I want to start working. I want to start socializing. I want to meet people again. I want to live the life of a 23-year-old or going on 24.
Yeah.
So I went back into work then as a flight attendant for about a year and a half, and I did a transatlantic, and I was still on Tamoxifen, I was still on Zoladex. I remember if my Zoladex, you'd have to give it every 28 days, and if it fell on a day that I was abroad, like I used to just throw it into my suitcase and bring it off me and give myself the Zoladex injection while I was in like the US or Norway or wherever I was at the time.
Gosh.
So yeah, and then still.
And at any point did your team talk to you about fertility and how would, like, did they talk about freezing eggs or was your cancer, which I think it was, so aggressive that really there wasn't time for that? You had to start chemo straight away.
Yeah, there just wasn't time for it. They spoke about like making an embryo, but like I was 22 and I remember just looking at them and looking at my mom and I was like, I'm not with anybody long term that I could think, yeah, I want to have a baby with them. I'm like, I'm 22. So they said that, but then I couldn't freeze my eggs because from the time I was diagnosed, the time my first chemo, it was 2 weeks. So there was no time to freeze eggs.
Yeah.
There just wasn't that time. So still to this day, I don't know. And we don't know until if I want to go get fertility testing or like I'm still on. So I just came off my Zoladex there about 6 months ago. My oncologist took me off it after 5 years. And I'm still on Tamoxifen and I could be on that for another 5 years.
Yeah.
We just don't know. It just depends on what my
oncologist
says.
Definitely the research has shown in the last 2 years at least.
Mm-hmm.
Well, while they used to say Tamoxifen was fine 5 years and you can come off, they're now saying 10 years isn't
and
much
because
better.
I'm that younger, they want to like obviously give me the best possible chance.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Wow. And you found love.
I did. Lockdown love.
Wow. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So I got with my fiance just at the start of lockdown. We met when I moved home to Clifton after losing my job due to COVID. And he was working on the oil rig. So he had come home from the US. And yeah. And we got together and we moved in a couple of months later. We both went back up to Dublin when COVID was kind of coming back to leaving us. We were coming back to normality. We both moved up to Dublin and then we got engaged. And now we just bought a house. And we've got two dogs and two cats and the whole lot.
Fantastic.
So great man, though.
Yeah.
Yeah. He took
and I
it
suppose
all on.
As a young woman, having been through the mill, having that conversation with a new partner must be difficult.
Yeah, it is, because he would have been the only serious relationship, let's say, that I would have had post it. So to have that conversation with somebody and not know what way they're going to take it is quite hard when you really, really love somebody. I would have been quite honest from the very start, because what's the point in wasting anybody's time? If somebody doesn't want that, they don't want it. And I think physically as well, I would look different because of my reconstruction surgeries. So that's another thing that kind of would play into it too. So like having a new relationship and having a new partner and not knowing if I can have kids or what my fertility is, like you have to have these conversations from the start. Sure. Because what's the point in going the mill and then mm-hmm. figuring out that mm-hmm. I couldn't have kids or I can't, and then they might want it, but he took it all on the chin. Wow. Yeah, he's amazing. He took it all on the chin.
Yeah. And it was interesting. I remember you saying, you know, there you were, this young, vibrant 22-year-old living life, you know, having great fun at the weekends, like every 22-year-old, you know, getting yourself back into work on a Monday, and then having to leave that kind of 22-year-old life of party and fun and move back home.
Yeah, so I moved home with my mom, my stepdad, and that was a big adjustment. But I'm sure it was a big adjustment for them as well.
True,
because they would have shipped me off and they were living their life. And then I just landed back with my bag. So, but my mom was amazing. My mom was, there's no words that can describe how good my mom was to me when I went through this. She brought me through everything. I wouldn't have done it without her.
Yeah.
Hands down. Yeah. She was there at every appointment, every chemo. She drove me up and down from Cavan, every radiotherapy I went through, everything. My mom mm-hmm. was there by my side for it all. So in that sense, it was lovely. And my brother as well, with my niece and his wife, they were very good to me as well. I think family is massive for this. Like you really need the support because you're already going through it. So having that outlet of family around you kind of brings you away from like, oh, you know, you're going through chemo and you have this really hard life. And it is. But at the same time, having the outlet of having really great friends and family around you really bring you from it, because as awful as it is, it's, like mine was obviously treatable, which was great. Mm-hmm. And I took it by the balls and I just went with it. And I did what I had to do. But it was from the strength that my friends, my family gave me that really brought me through it, because I have a really great family support. Mm-hmm. And that's definitely what you need.
So
and important. My brother from Toronto came home. He surprised me one day and he came home and he like rocked into the house. And I remember my mom and I were like,
yeah,
and it was great. And then my brother from London, and like it was nice. But it is
that impact. While it does impact the person themselves, you know, physically, obviously, and mentally, but it is that support crew. Everybody is impacted by the
it's not just the person who's going through it. I think it's actually even harder for the people who are supporting you through it, because they're the ones that are trying to keep the brave face. They're the ones who are trying to pick up all the pieces and make it seem like everything is going to be okay. So like my mom would have taken the brunt of it all. She would have been the one smiling and you know, like getting me through it and looking after me and like putting her life on hold to a point, because she then started looking after her 22-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
So like she would have put her life on hold, and so would my stepdad have to help me and to make sure that I was okay. And that's hard.
Very, very difficult. And tell me, did you venture down the road of Dr. Google?
No, actually I didn't. Well done. I think it was because I just didn't, like, you know, I just didn't think about it.
Yeah,
I think I was
the information
like,
you were being given obviously was enough for you to just accept.
I think
and
my
move
mom
on.
Probably did. My mom definitely did. But I just didn't. I think I was just, no, I'm not going to say content, but I think I was like happy, as you said, with the information that I'd been given. And I was just like, but I'd say my mom was definitely a secret Googler.
Yeah.
She still is.
And what about your friend network? Were they surprised? I mean, 22 years of age is young.
Very.
Very young. I mean, look, statistically, women under the age of 50, between 20 and 50, we have 23% of women are diagnosed, which is staggering statistic. You know, and you are one of those.
I am one of those.
You know, but how did your friends?
They were all as shocked as me. I think we were like, what? I think it took a while for everyone to get their head around it. And I remember I wrote a blog after being diagnosed. And I wrote a couple of them because I think it was kind of like, again, like an outlet for me to maybe express my feelings that I had, because you've so many feelings. You've so many like things going on and you're like, you know, like I was a very positive person throughout it. I still am a very positive person. I think it's something that I was dealt with. And to a sense, I'm glad that, say, it was me, that I was so positive through it. And I think that positivity brought me on that journey of being like, because I was so positive throughout it, I didn't feel maybe as sick, or I didn't, you know, I didn't let myself get down in the dumps about it. I just thought like, you know what, shit happens and this has happened to me and let's just move on with it. And where do I go next? What's my next point? But it would have been, like I wrote a blog about it and I remember like people commenting being like, that's crazy. Like, you're so young. Like,
yeah.
I can't believe that. Like, you're only 22. And I think it's a massive shock. And everybody who I met across the board when I was in the hospital after I'd been diagnosed, they were like, you're 22. And I'm like, yeah. 22.
Because it must have been daunting sitting in James's in the waiting room and looking around and seeing the age profiles of others.
Yeah, even
and
now.
And they're probably looking at you going, with your mom thinking, oh, you're here with your mom.
Yeah. It's even now. Like, so I see my oncologist every 6 months. And I'll still go see him in his rooms. And I will sit there. And there'll just be women who are like between like 50 to 80. And I am always, and always have been, the youngest person in that waiting room. Yeah. And I remember being in James's after my surgery, and it's like a training hospital.
Yes.
They have a lot of people come in, like registrars and so on. Mm. And I remember sitting there, and like a couple of guys came in after I'd done my surgery. And like, they were like, oh, do you mind if the guys here, like, stay while we do your examination? And like, I had been so used at this point of people looking at my boobs, and I thought, yeah, no problem. And it would have been guys my age,
yeah,
do you know what I mean? And they're all young doctors, and I would have been like, yeah, it's fine. And like, they'll obviously like check it out and look at it, and they feel it just to make sure that everything is obviously okay and there's no infections and so on. But I remember thinking, like, I was like, oh my god, they're my age, and I'm here lying in a bed like after having a mastectomy, and we're the same age.
I know, and they're probably astounded by that.
Yeah.
That is,
like, do you know what I mean? And I'm like, that's crazy to think.
Yeah.
But I just didn't have any shame. I was like, yeah, it's fine.
I know. Well, especially
you're
having
so
been
used
through
to it.
Yeah, when you've been through so much at that point, it's like,
you're so used to it.
Yeah.
There's no difference in it now at that point. Like, so.
Yeah. And when you finally finished your treatment and you finally finished your surgeries, you get to the point, and I've often spoken to people about this, where you are deemed fit and well again.
Mm-hmm.
And you suddenly sort of, is that when you kind of think to yourself, holy mother, I have just been through on this roller coaster?
I think that's when the mind will start playing. I think that's when that side of it comes in, because you go on this road of, okay, well, it's chemo this week, and then next week it's surgery, and then you're on such a, like, because it was so quick for me, that it was such a quick moving, and then that 14 months was up really quickly, and then I sat and I thought, oh my God, like, I've no hair, I've no eyelashes, I've no eyebrows, I've no nothing. And I'm like 23. And I'm like, that's when the thoughts, that's when you start thinking. And I think that's when the mental health comes into it. I would never have suffered with mental health. It wouldn't, like, I said, very positive person throughout the whole thing. And then that was when I got to the point where I was like, okay, well, I'm not sick anymore, because, you know, my chemo's done and my surgery's done and this is done and that's done. So now it's time for me to get back into the world. But I think maybe had I have let it consume me and consume who I was as a person, I think that's when stuff could have started happening. Mm-hmm. But because I just said, like, you know, I'm still Circa. I'm not, oh, the girl with cancer. Mm-hmm. Like, I was still me, and I was still doing what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm.
And so you just packed your Zoladex and off you went
off
on your
long-haul
flights.
Off I went my long-haul flights with my suitcase, like 20 kg overweight. But yeah, I just didn't let it consume me, because I think that's what you have to do.
Mm-hmm.
But that was my experience of it.
Yeah.
That's what I needed to do.
And I suppose it brings it all around to, you know, one of the things we as Breast Cancer Ireland are passionate about is that education and awareness piece, especially for younger women, because we find that, as we said earlier, breast check cater for the 50 plus people to go and have your free mammogram. But it's more a case of women understanding, and men, because, you know, 1 in 1,000 men do get breast cancer. It's about understanding the signs and symptoms, that it is more than a lump.
Yeah.
You know, it can be that dimpling on the underside of the breast.
Yeah.
It can be one breast slightly larger than the other. You know, it can be a swelling in the lymph nodes, etc. Like, there are 8 signs and symptoms. And we often say to people, you know, the most important thing is to, we say often, is to download our Breast Aware app. It's a free app.
Yeah.
Sends a monthly reminder to your phone, little pink ribbon pops up, and it just shows you a simulated video guide on how to do a proper self-exam and also what to look out for.
Yeah.
The idea being that if you spot it, if you're normal, if you start at a baseline of normal today, in a couple of months' time, if anything changes and you're concerned, you go and contact your GP. Because early detection, it does save lives.
It does.
you know, and
we're quite proven.
You are proof of, yeah. You know, because we have a complimentary service that we provide to schools, and yeah. We send out our education coordinators all around the country. And one of the things we've noticed is that the awareness sessions they might do, there's five of them covering Munster, Connacht, and Leinster. And what we find is that of the 35,000 women and young girls that they see every year, there are a couple of early detected cases as a result, which is harrowing, but it's fantastic that we're catching them.
Yeah.
So that is really, really important. And I know it's something that you feel passionate about.
Definitely.
Is that younger women just need to take their breast health more seriously.
Definitely. Because my friends would have been the same as me. Like, they wouldn't have been breast aware. And then after my diagnosis, my friends were breast aware all the time. And I always say it to them, I'm like, check your boobs. And like my best friend just had a baby, and I'm always like, double check, just make sure, just do it every month for me, just make sure. And she is very good, she does do it, because she's just like, no, it's happened to you, and you know, it can just happen to anybody. And that's my thing, is that it's not, I think it's very much associated with an older generation thing, and it's proving time and time again that it's not. And I just want people, young people, like people in middle age, or like even health professionals, to understand that when somebody comes to you with something like this, to not dismiss them. Because if it weren't for my mom that day saying, I want to see a consultant, I would have gone, because I would have said, sure, you're a health professional, you know.
And you were saying to me, come back in 8 weeks.
And I would have come back in 8 weeks.
Yeah, with a very different story.
A very, very different story.
Especially with that aggressive.
So that's what I'm so passionate about, is that I want everybody to know that it's definitely not just somebody who's 50 plus that this happens to. And it is something that it will continue to happen. And there'll be people younger than me. Of course there will be. And I'm sure there is people who were younger than me when I was diagnosed. But it's something that people need to be aware of.
And as you say, the medical profession, the GP practices, it's something that we took on about 2 or 3 years ago, where we were sending our shower card.
Yeah.
To all the GP surgeries, because we were hearing a lot of case studies saying, you know, but my GP thought, no, I'm too young. Yeah. So off you go on your merry way, and I'll see you in 2 months time or 3 months time.
Yeah.
If it still persists. So oftentimes that can be, in your case, it would have been a very different diagnosis.
Yeah. And I'm so glad that my GP as a woman was like, no, let's just send you.
Yeah.
Let's just send you as a precaution. Yeah. Let's make sure that we do this.
Yeah.
And that has to be something that has to be across the board.
And it is interesting, because the GPs do triage you, which is, you know, are you medium risk, low risk, high risk?
Yeah.
And for even them saying to you that you were probably a low risk.
Yeah.
But it was the perseverance of your mom.
Yeah.
Again, day to insist.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if it weren't for my mom, like I would have gone, because I'm just like, it's fine. Like,
they know.
But they know. And I can say that when that consultant came in and felt my lump, he knew.
Yeah.
He knew, because he deals with this day in, day out, 100 times a day.
Yeah,
he knew.
And that's it. And I think, though, women, and indeed men, once you know your body, you know, and if you know your body and you know your baseline, if you spot that abnormality, you know, it's intuition as well. You just say, I got to have this seen.
Yeah, 100%.
You know, and I do think women, and we all need to be a little bit more forceful if we are concerned. You know, I really want to get to the end of this.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Sarika, for travelling from Cavan today to chat to us. I know you're going to be an inspiration to so many young women. I am fully confident that they will all be so much more breast aware having listened to this podcast. Thank you so much, and I wish you the very best in the future.
Thank you.
The information in this podcast is based on the personal stories of those we have chatted to. If you are concerned in any way, please contact your GP immediately, or you can contact us at breastcancerireland.com.